I am recording.
He's recording.
Okay, welcome to another edition of Twat Radio. I am Bit Viper.
And I am Power Stick.
Okay, we're going to be talking about two subjects that are related to each other, at least in my opinion. They're Cygwin and Bash scripting, because the reason I like Cygwin so much is because I like Bash and scripting and all the Unix utilities. So, Phillips here, or Power Stick, sorry. I just gave out your secret name.
Now they'll know.
And he's going to ask questions of, you know, and the same thing applies as always. If he understands it, then everyone else should, so.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
The idiot knows what he's talking about.
Then we'll, yeah. Okay, so what is Cygwin? Well, Cygwin, first of all, it's already been discussed a couple times on Twat, but not in a very comprehensive manner. One guy talked about compiling something on Cygwin for... I think it was Iron Geek for exploits. The other guy talked about using it as a little tool on your USB drive, but he didn't really talk too much about it. I mean, that was one small part of the show. So I wanted to devote an entire show to Cygwin because it's so important. I have to use Windows at work, so
as do most people,
right? So I still like the Unix tools, though. I gotta tell you, I'm so addicted to this Bash stuff. And
yeah, it's I'm kind of getting into this.
Yeah,
Linux thing.
You just got into Linux like what, 4 or 5 months ago? Maybe
yeah,
more?
Slowly. I'm like crawling into it because I'm so. Because
you're doing Counter Strike like 99% of your time.
Yeah, I still haven't figured out how to get it to work on Linux. Once that's like, on, I'm always gonna be in Linux.
Right.
But yeah, the things I've seen, it's awesome. So I can see how Cygwin's cool when you don't want to have to get back into Linux or load up a VM or whatever.
Well, there's a lot of utilities that come with Linux and Unix that are just, they're very small, they're very powerful, and you can string them together in really powerful ways. We're gonna talk about that just a little bit because I hope that someone listens to this. It's like Windows only. Says, you know what, I think I'll download Cygwin and just try it out and then just get hooked like we did. Okay, so what is Cygwin? It's an environment that it basically allows you to have Unix-like stuff on your Windows desktop. Basically, the default install puts a shell on your desktop. So you double-click it, a little icon, and a little shell pops up. Kind of like a DOS prompt, but it looks a little bit different because it's Cygwin.
Because it's green.
It's green, yeah. It's like a default green color.
And it really is like when you load up a command prompt in Windows.
Yeah.
But it's
very similar.
Yeah, except then you have
the POSIX environment. Except instead of DIR, it's LS, you know, and all the other stuff. So why in the world would you want to do that? Well, first of all, let's complete the description. So by default, you get the Bash, but I guess you can change that to some other shell if you want. I don't know why you'd want to do that. You could even install X, you know, a graphics system, which would then allow you to install KDE and GNOME.
In Windows?
In Cygwin, yeah. Isn't that crazy? You can actually
I didn't know that.
No, a lot of people don't, but you actually, because I don't understand why you'd want to do that. You're already in a windowing environment.
Yeah,
why install a window environment on top of a window?
Does it run in the little thing, or does
it
load
you get
up
a little
another
thing.
Window?
You can maximize it. You can actually make it look like it's KDE is running on your computer, even though Windows is kind of, if you minimize it or something, it's fine. Yeah, so you can run graphical. It's still, the question remains why. So I'm not going to go into it too much, because I don't really know why you'd want to do that. I haven't seen a good example as to why. I've done it. There it was. There's KDE.
Really?
You know, it took a lot of downloading.
That sounds like one of those things you could be like, sweet. Okay, I'm never going to use that.
Yeah, delete.
But I did it.
And I could say, exactly. So anyway, so you could do that. Anyway, so let's talk real quickly about how to set it up, because it's so simple. You just go to cygwin.com. By the way, Cygwin is spelled C-Y-G-W-I-N. And you download a setup.exe file from them. Okay, you run it, and then it says, "Hey, here's a list of mirrors I can download from. Please grab one of them, and that's hopefully close to you. So don't go to Japan. You know, try to keep it nearby." And then it gives you a list of packages, and it automatically check marks the ones that are, you know, necessary for the default installation. You can check more, but so anyway. You hit go on, hit next, it downloads them, and then...
Do you remember what kind of packages? I mean...
You know, to be honest with you, I don't know. I don't remember, because the first time I just hit next, you know, like anything.
I just remember there being a lot of packages. I remember doing the next thing too.
Oh, you mean in general? Just how many are there? Oh, there's tons.
Yeah. But what kind of things would you
add? All the packages that you've seen in, like, for example, we'll talk about adding Make and GCC so you can compile.
So you can install those at this when you run setup. You can reinstall those right at the beginning.
Absolutely.
Or install them later.
Exactly. We'll talk about. So you know, you do the install process, and now it's there. Now you got a SIGWIN icon. You can double click. You can always rerun. You want to keep that setup file around because you can rerun it, and it'll look and show you what packages you have installed, and you can add more or subtract. That's your little manager there.
You don't do it
in the shell. You do it in the setup.
You don't delete the setup file.
Yeah. Like I mean, if you programs. Do, you just go download it again. If you forget, but that's what you use to tweak it. Okay.
Rock and roll.
So there was that.
How to install.
Okay, so what actually happens? What gets installed? Okay, usually I think by default, I guess like most things, you could probably change it, but it installs to /SIGWIN, and then underneath that directory, you have all your average user, Unix directories that you're used to seeing, like Unix, home, etsy, usr, you know, everything that you see in Linux, you see there. And that's kind of neat. It's all in underneath SIGWIN, so it's nice and compact, out of the way. If you get bored with it, you can just delete SIGWIN and it's done. So it's pretty cool.
This might be a way to even introduce, because I don't know, I mean, live CDs are pretty awesome, but if you
had
a friend wanted to try Linux but didn't really want to do all the...
Yeah, because you mean, what you, know, you, you have to
difficult.
Restart your computer, right, with a live
yeah,
CD,
exactly.
Right? With SIGWIN, you just kind of, you know, when the boss isn't looking at work, you can just run it and say, I want to learn.
Totally.
And then,
you get the command line. I guess you can get the window environment that way, too.
If you want...
people are going to want to see pretty windows.
Yeah, but I'm trying to talk to, I guess, the people that are willing to look past the graphics a little bit and try to understand a little bit more about the heart of Linux and on Unix systems, how these little commands work, and learn how to make scripts, as well as use all these fabulous packages that SIGWIN allows you to install. And we'll get to a couple of examples.
You really should learn these things. Like, as a Linux, it's funny, when I first started using Linux, I was like, oh, I'll stay in the window. And now I'm like always in the command prompt.
Absolutely,
terminal.
Yeah. You learn VI, for example.
Yeah,
SIGWIN's a great way to, or Nano. Yeah, I mean that's easier.
That's my
whatever you want to use, Emacs. I mean, but you can practice it all on SIGWIN, for example. So,
yeah.
Okay. So anyway, now you've installed SIGWIN. What the hell? Why is that so awesome? Well, we're gonna talk about Bash for a couple of minutes here. There's a lot of small little scripts or programs that you can use, and you can actually string them together. I mean, everyone that runs Linux right now probably knows all this stuff, but for the Windows guys or gals, here there's some examples like grep, for example, which searches files or something for a string that you're looking for. Sed, which can do search and replace. Awk, which... Awk's always tough to explain. It does things, it sorts things in columns and stuff. There's tons of things that all these different commands.
And I'd like to interject too, the batch file in DOS, like I was just trying to make one the other day.
Yeah.
It's just sorely lacking in comparison to batch.
Well, in Windows, you think to yourself, if I want to do anything interesting, I got to go to C or Pascal.
Totally.
Or go whip out one of those things.
I just wanted to do a loop. And you can do a loop in batch, but it has to be, it's like a loop in a set that you define right there. You can't say like 1 to 5.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen.
It's terrible. And the use of variables sucks. And I mean, you can do some stuff. And I've seen some wacky batch scripts.
I've seen some pretty impressive ones,
yeah,
but it's difficult.
It really obviously wasn't designed to. And you don't have all these cool tools like sed, awk, and all that other stuff that we were talking
about. Going to be able to use inside of Bash.
Yeah, exactly. So
that, actually, we just kind of glossed over that, but that's somewhat of a good comparison, right? That Bash is kind of like Batch. I mean, Bash is a scripting language.
Well, it's a shell, and you're right. It does, it interprets.
Oh, really?
I think you're right. It's a shell. I guess in Linux land, a shell is something that interprets commands. Now,
okay.
The commands could be in a script form, like in a file, or it could be one at a time.
Okay.
It's an interpreter in a sense. But let's take a quick example, because I'm going to relate this to something that I've done recently. Take the grep command. If you want to search a file, a text file for something, you can say grep, and then I believe the syntax is the next word is what you're searching for, and then the next word is the file that you want to search.
Should we try?
Yeah.
I should
have had that memorized, but yeah, man, grep. And... Okay, so pattern and file. So I was right. The pattern that you're searching for in file. And what grep does is it returns all the lines in the text file that you send it that have that word that you're searching for.
Yeah.
Okay. So that so you can use grep, for example, to look for all the instances of hello in a text file, and it'll return all the lines. Now let's say you want to know, you want to count that number of returns or results, number of lines, really. There's a command called WC, I believe it is. Yeah, there you go. WC, and you give it that hyphen L option, which means count new lines, and it'll count the number of lines in a file, a text file. Okay.
Okay.
Now these, you can actually work take the output of grep, which delivers maybe three lines that had hello in it.
Okay.
And then you send that to WC by using the pipe command, which is simply the vertical line there above the enter key. You have to hit the shift backslash.
Yeah.
And then you type in WC hyphen L. You've now what happens there? Well, the grep returns, like, for example, the three lines that have hello in it.
Mm-hmm.
And the WC hyphen L counts the number of lines to be three. So now you have a number. Three is the number of times that hello was found.
Okay.
Now, why am I bringing this up? This is a pretty boring example. Well, the reason I am is because I actually used a script that did something like this, and it's actually in use right now, that looks at a log file and counts the number of times failure to log in occurred, or something like that. I forget exactly what it was.
For
it,
hack attempts.
Exactly. I have an SSH server running, and I'm constantly monitoring the SSH log to see how many failures there are, and then if it increases.
You say grep failure.
Exactly.
And then that's and then the name of the and then the file name.
Uh-huh. And then pipe that to WC-L, and then compare that number to the last time it was measured. And if it increased, then email me on my little BlackBerry here that, hey, someone's trying to hack your crap.
Hackers afoot.
Here's the current number of attempts. So,
and here's their address.
Yeah. And that was like three lines of, well, it's probably more like five or six lines in a bash script.
That's cool, though.
Yeah.
That's really useful.
Now, I don't know how you could have done that in Windows.
I don't know that you could have done that in Windows.
And yet, it's only five lines in a bash script, you know? That's what I'm trying to get across here, is the power of bash.
But what's the thing about that?
And use tools.
That's you're running SSH on a Windows box.
Yeah, well, I'm going to get to that. Okay. Actually, that's a good point. Okay. I mean, we kind of glossed over that. I'm going to get to all the cool uses at the very end. There's one other section I want to do first before we talk about all the neat things that people typically use SIGWIN for.
Okay.
And that is compiling. The coolness that is SIGWIN allows you to actually not just use the packages that are in the setup file that it allows you to install, but you can take virtually any Linux or Unix source code and compile it right there. Like, remember when Kaylin, that's my daughter, was like 7 or 8 months old, not too long ago, she couldn't go to sleep. And
white noise, right?
The only thing we found that helped was white noise. So I went in under Windows trying to find a utility to do white noise.
Yeah.
And I couldn't find anything. But I did find something under Linux, and I compiled it and it worked. But it only worked in Linux.
Totally.
Well, I wanted it to work. I wanted to drop Kaylin off at my mom's. I wanted her to have the white noise. Who is not running Linux, because she's got Quicken, and that's another story. But I wanted her to have white noise. I could actually compile the white noise program in SIGWIN, and I get a white noise.exe file. How cool is that? All I do is
It's Linux source code,
yes,
compiled in SIGWIN.
Yes.
And SIGWIN turns it into a .exe for Windows.
Correct. That you just could double click on from a file. You don't even have to be in SIGWIN to run it. You could double click on it from File Explorer, and the .exe file will run. Now, there is a caveat.
What's that?
Okay. Now, in order to run a SIGWIN executable, you have to have SIGWIN1.dll somewhere in your path. And in other words, I usually drop it under SQL in Windows or something on someone else's computer. But you only got to do that once. Once it's there, you can drop any number of executables anywhere on their system, and they'll be able to run them just fine.
That's not much of a caveat.
It's really not bad. You know, it's like 200K
and that's,
or something.
So, I mean, okay, so you just have to carry SIGWIN1.dll. They don't need to have SIGWIN installed.
No, you can just
any Windows person can run anything that you've compiled.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anything you can compile. There's some things that won't compile that need some heavy duty stuff that SIGWIN just can't handle. I don't. It's not often, but it does happen where you can't compile it, or you need to tweak it so much to make it work with Windows that it wouldn't work.
Can you compile Wine in SIGWIN in Windows?
I'm gonna freaking. I have no idea. I'm gonna have nightmares about that tonight. Like, oh my god, what comes first?
Noop.
Okay, so compiling—that's pretty damn cool, huh?
I mean, that's
white noise is one example because there was a program that was free. I didn't have to buy a Windows shareware utility, which is all that was around.
I've often run into things where it's like, this looks like a cool pro. Oh, it's a Linux program. Okay, so you can't. You know, when I was only Windows, it's like, well, so much for that. I'll go use this other whatever program.
Sigwin might be the answer. You never know.
Yeah,
okay,
that's neat.
All right, so let's.
I like it. Something I can use.
You like that? Okay, so finally, what kind of stuff can you do with Sigwin that's useful? Yeah, you can play with it. Yeah, you can learn about Linux. But what if you really wanted to actually do something useful? Well, one of the things that you can do with Sigwin is you can actually install OpenSSH right from there. There's an OpenSSH package, and then there's a line you run to actually, there's a script that comes with the package that allows you to set up the server. It's right there in the manual pages. I'm not going to go through all the boring text of what you do, but it's...
And we're going to assume that people know what SSH is.
Oh, my fault. SSH, in case you don't know, it's like Telnet. Anyone has ever done Telnet, you know, logging in, but it's secure. And you can even do file transfers through it. And other things. So that's OpenSSH. Very handy. In fact, because I have OpenSSH running on my Windows 2003 server at work, I can actually log into my SSH server or my 2003 server with my BlackBerry because I have that little free SSH. I'm taking my BlackBerry out right now because this cool little program doesn't work just on BlackBerrys. It actually works on pretty much any Java device. It is called
Java SSH.
MIDP SSH. That's MID, P as in pony, SSH, and it's completely free. So now I can log into my server and I can run, you know, whatever scripts I want. I can even run the net command, which is a Microsoft utility. You know, so I can
on Sigwin.
On Sigwin, yeah. I can actually, while I'm logged in through SSH, I can type in net space, I don't know, say I want to make a new user, net space user space the name of the user.
That's cool.
It'll make a new user. If
is
I want
that
to change,
something Sigwin has, or just,
no, no,
it's talking
I'm,
Windows?
No, I'm talking to the net command in Windows.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, so I can change passwords. I mean, it's all using the net. You
any
have
command
to,
line in Windows you can do.
Pretty much. I haven't seen any problems with any most DOS-like programs in Windows.
And you can do all the Sigwin stuff.
And all the Sigwin stuff.
I like
all
that.
Yeah, so it lets me in, and I can do all that. So I can change someone's password while I'm on vacation. You know, just a couple seconds, I log in, and it's all good to go. So that's pretty neat.
But
and
no
it's
one
secure.
Will ever contact you on vacation.
No, of course not. It happened, just in case you guys are wondering what the inside joke was. Okay, so that's an OpenSSH. Pretty damn cool. I made it really secure by editing the OpenSSH. There's a file called sshd.config, and in it you can actually make it so only one person can log in, and that's me. So that gets rid of any other people being able to log in from the server, because you can do that too.
Question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, and remember, I have that utility, that script running in the background that's checking the SSH logs, making sure that no one's trying to hack me.
So when, if you're, let's say, power outage, whatever, server reboots, it'll automatically load
Good
Sigwin?
Point. Very good point. So what happens is it actually installs itself as a service.
Okay.
It shows up on the list of Windows services like all the other Windows services.
Nice.
And you can make it automatic. You can make it manual. You know,
all
that crap.
Whatever it is.
In fact, I did the same thing for my little thing, that little script I'm talking about. I made that a service as well using a command in Sigwin. It's like sig.
So you can make anything that you've compiled in Sigwin a service?
Yeah, pretty
That's
much.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that one. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it'll add it to, you hit F5 on your services screen, and it shows up there because it refreshes.
So you can have the OpenSSH and the bash, that little
always script. Start up by default.
They're all services.
Yes.
So they just run.
Yeah.
So you don't necessarily like have to load Sigwin. It's running all that stuff that you've compiled. You compile all that stuff?
Yeah, Sigwin is not running in the background.
So you're running a bash script. You just have a little
Remember,
bash
it's using
script.
The Sigwin 1 DLL. It's all anything needs to run. Doesn't need to run Sigwin.
I am impressed.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty damn cool, right? Okay, now another very useful utility is rsync. Rsync is made by the same guy, Tridgewell, or is it Tridgewell or Tridge? Anyway, the guy that made Samba. I mean, this guy is a freaking god in the Linux world.
He knows things about networking.
He knows a little bit. Anyway, so he made rsync, which is a really slick program used to back up hard drives, either from the same hard drive to another hard drive, in the same computer over the... you know, the bus, or even over a network. In fact, you can even do it over a network through an SSH tunnel, which means it's very secure.
So secure copying or backing up or whatever.
Absolutely. So you can install box to box. You can install rsync as a package on SigWind and use it to push, you know, whatever hard drives on your Windows XP machine, server machine, to some other backup. So I don't know if you remember, a while ago I had that NSLU2 Linux little thing that
the slug that allows
it's basically a hard drive attached to a thing that puts it on the network.
It's like a USB, almost like a USB server, like a print server is on an Ethernet.
Yeah, exactly. Like it just takes Ethernet. A hard drive and puts it on the network for you.
Yeah.
And but it runs Linux, so I was able to run rsync on that, and then do an SSH tunnel from work to home to do the nightly backup. So if the work burned
securely.
Down. Securely, so if you know there was a fire or something and everything was lost at work, I'd have the
thing here. I haven't really looked, but I can't think of anything that Windows has to do that. So that's like a tool that would be useful.
You know, using SSH is pretty damn secure.
And
then automate the process by you can use the Windows scheduler to run rsync every day or whatever that you want.
Really cool.
Yeah. So I mean, those are just some of the few things that I've done with SigWind that I'm an idiot when it comes to Linux. I'm sure people are doing some other stuff too that just blow me away.
I really like how integrated it is into the Windows environment. I mean, the fact you can make it a service, it can run without SigWind.
Yeah, it really does it. There's all these kinds of cool... I mean, all you have to do, I'll put some notes on the show notes and everything about, you know, what command it is to make a service out of something and all that. But they make it pretty damn easy. You can add a service, remove the service. It all works with Windows.
Is it sigrunserve.exe?
That's exactly it. That's it right there. I did a search for everything with sigrun. And there it is.
CYGRUNSRV.exe.
Exactly. And you can run, put help at the end of that, -- help to figure out how it works. That's it. So anyway, I just really had to get that out there because this program is amazing. I just cannot believe you can compile Linux code on a Windows machine and
have it
work.
This looks really useful. I actually did dabble in SigWind years ago. For me, years ago is like 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago. And it was one of those things where I was like, this looks cool, but I didn't know what to do with it.
Right.
Just like I actually
didn't
know
what
to do with
it. It's just a little prompt that blinks. You're like, what do I do now? You know?
Yeah, totally.
So, I mean...
But knowing all this, it's like... Yeah. And now that I know a little bit, too, about the things that Linux has to offer,
sure.
That's really neat. Can you do things like apt-get, or is that where you just go to setup and
install
that way?
Yeah, I looked into that. I tried to install packages from the prompt, and I couldn't. And it's something like you have to actually call setup.exe from SigWind or something like that.
Okay.
I mean, give it command switches.
Ugh.
And it's possible, but you have to get everything right the first time because there's no feedback about...
Like, as well just double-click the setup.exe.
Yeah, because I actually did want to install something from SSH from when I was away, and I don't know how to do this. So don't know the answer to that. Haven't seen an answer for that, but
okay
well, that is,
well, you sold me. How much does SigWind cost?
Well, Phil, I have a great deal for you today only and even tomorrow and for the rest of the time forever. It's GPL
for the rest of the existence of the GPL.
yep.
And GPL watch, whatever, the guy that does all legal watching, as long as that stuff's around.
This guy, yeah, they're on it. It's completely
free. Do you know
free.
What I'm talking about?
Not at all, but
we'll get that
like I do. So yeah, completely free. So if you ever want to learn, you know what I like? I like to practice like sed, and because sed's kind of a tricky thing. If you just learn it for a few 5 minutes and then put it down and pick it up, 5 weeks later, you're gonna forget everything. So it's nice to kind of keep up on your skills, go in there and practice a little bit all these utilities because they're so damn powerful. I mean, you can just do so much with them. Okay, so that I hope you guys, some of you thought that was informative and maybe even want to try SigWind out again. CYG. WIN.com and completely free, nothing to lose. I say you should check it out.
Yeah, go with the green, it's good stuff.
Okay, hey, that was another twat episode. And
another twat in the fridge.
That's right. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
Bye bye.
Such pleasure that I'll treasure. So for now, dear, au revoir, ma belle. But I vow, dear, not farewell. For in time, we may have one. love's glory.